If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, the Star Trek podcast about Deep Space Nine by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
We're back where we belong, Ben, on opposite sides of the same coast, no longer looking at each other during. I'm wearing a comfy pair of sweatpants.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm wearing a comfy pair of shorts because it is hot as fuck here.
Oh, I left and then it becomes shorts weather. That's typical, yeah. Right?
You came for like maybe the rainiest couple days that Los Angeles has seen in 5 years.
Yeah.
From Seattle.
The day I got to LA, they were calling it Storm of the Year.
Fun.
And it was the thing that delayed our flight to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
Ben, did we talk about the Grand Canyon trip at all? I can't remember.
I don't think we did.
Yeah. I saw the Grand Canyon for the first time, and I did it with you. And a bunch of other Max Fun pals,
yeah.
Working on a fun pledge drive specific reward project from last year.
Yeah, it was really shameful for me to stand there and have you look back and forth from the canyon to me and say you didn't know which one was more empty.
Still don't.
Be talking about that in therapy.
I just looked into that great big chasm and I felt nothing but respect.
Speaking of the Max Fun Drive, Adam, this is the Max Fun Drive.
It's happening as we speak. And I don't want to overpromise something to people who support the show, but this extra special Grand Canyon episode was a reward for last year's contributors. So I can't even imagine the things we have in store for our listeners if we're able to reach that big 25,000 contributions number in support of the network.
One thing I think we can promise, which has probably already been announced on social media at this point, but while we were at the Grand Canyon, we were having a hang with Stuart Wellington of the Flophouse podcast, and we got to talking about how bad Star Trek V is, and wouldn't it be fun to do a monster Flophouse Greatest Gen crossover episode where we talk about that movie, where we flop it and Greatest Gen it at the same time? And I think that's going to happen if the network hits the goal.
The greatest flop is what we could call it.
Yeah.
Two great tastes that'll most definitely taste great together, Ben. You and I will sit on the end with the ugly hosts while the hosts of the Flophouse occupy the first three chairs in that great-looking band.
Yeah. So we'll be back later to talk about pledge gifts one more time. But guys, this is the Max Fun Drive. There are only 2 weeks a year where this happens, and it's where we develop the large majority of the support that we get for the show. If you're not supporting the show already and it's in your budget, head to MaximumFun.org/donate right now. Become a member. You will feel awesome every time you listen, and you'll get great gifts that we'll talk about a little later.
Become an extra good friend of DeSoto. A friend with benefits of DeSoto, even.
MaximumFun.org/donate. Adam, It has been a long time since we, the hosts of this show, cracked open our Bible. What do you say we do a little Bible study?
It's good to see you all in church.
It's called the Bible.
That's the way God wants it. I don't know why, dude.
All these questions? Is a little blind faith too much to ask?
Did you go to a lot of church when you were little?
I did go to church a lot when I was little.
I did too. Did you ever? Were you ever made to read the verses in front of the congregation?
I was. I was also in the choir, and I was an acolyte. I like helped the priest during services when I was a teen.
Jesus, Ben. I think we have a very similar background in that regard. Of course, I was disinvited from the choir, but in a rare bit of non-forgiveness by those at my church, they were unwilling to accept me into contralto standing in the choir.
They said, "Well, he has the voice of an angel. We cannot allow him into our choir."
The lungs of an angel who were slowly filling with liquid. Well, Ben, I've turned to page 14 in the Star Trek DS9 show Bible. Page 14 is in the middle section of how they describe their main cast characters, and wouldn't you know it, for this episode, I've turned to the chapter on Quark.
Fun.
Quark is the Ferengi bartender. The Ferengi race has been a part of STTNG since the very beginning. They are ugly, sexist, greedy little aliens who are interested only in profit and getting their hands on anything of yours they happen to fancy. Quark runs many of the entertainment concessions on DS9, including the bar, restaurant, gambling house, and the holosuites upstairs. He spends most of his time behind the bar.
It is interesting that he spends so much time behind the bar. Like, he's like a real hands-on restaurateur, you know?
He has not come around to that thing where delegation is the true power of management.
Right. Yeah, he's kind of particular about how the drinks get made, and he doesn't really trust anybody else to do it.
He's not big on soft power, is he?
No.
If there is some scam being run in the sector, it often involves him. Beyond the malevolence, he is a charming host and forges an interesting relationship with Sisko. They actually enjoy sparring together now and then, and the Ferengi lends a hand to solve problems for the commander, as long as there's something in it for him. His effete sexist attitudes make Kira an obvious adversary. He is consumed with passion for Dax. So ends the reading.
Peace be with you, Adam.
Peace be with you, Ben. Wow, sort of an abrupt end to the Quark chapter. Letter from Quark to the Corinthians.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Odo doesn't get name-checked in that write-up.
I know. They seem like they are more naturally adversarial than Kira and Quark, but maybe we'll find out more from the Odo chapter in the show Bible.
What an interesting chapter to select, given the topic of today's episode, Adam. It's season 2, episode 7, Rules of Acquisition.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
We get a real fun morn scene to start things off. I have so many questions about this cold open. So, Odo it's sort of like closing time on the promenade.
Yeah, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, Bourne.
Why does the promenade close, Ben? This is like when you're unfortunate enough to be at an airport and departing on a flight that is leaving after all of the restaurants and bars close.
Right.
And you're just, that's another moment where I'm like, why isn't there one thing open in the airport? There should be things open on the promenade at all times, right?
You'd think that it would be a 24-hour thing if only... Is it 25 hours? Is that like a Bajor thing, that everything's on a 25-hour clock?
I think so.
But like, ships put in there all the time, right? And they've got their own clocks on the ship, right? It's not like you put into port and you reset all the clocks to whatever they're at, right? That'd be fucking chaos, Adam. That'd be like going from three shifts to four shifts.
I don't like you.
And that never stuck.
Oh.
If you're going to have us believe that this is a place with closed hours, then stick a couple of vending machines on the promenade. I want to know what's in those vending machines. We see nary a vending machine in the entire promenade. Morn gets up and shuffles over to the closed doors of Quark's. Is Morn a hobo? Does he have nowhere to live?
He's just in Quark's until he gets kicked out and then sleeps it off on a bench and then goes back into Quark's. Where does the money for paying for what he buys at Quark's come from?
I both do and don't want to know how Morn earns that money that he then just dumps straight back into Quark's. I think it's pretty safe to say that the fun has stopped for Morn. W/R/T Quark's.
Yeah.
It's sort of a sad story.
Yeah.
The more I think about it.
Morn is drinking because he has to keep the pain at bay.
Much like the story of most people with enormous cocks, Morn's is a story of tragedy and failing to fit in to normal life. He's going to end up like Dirk Diggler, like just jerking it in a pickup truck for $10.
Yeah.
13 inches, a tough load. I don't treat you gently.
It's not how you want to end up.
That's sad. Well, inside Quark's, the activity has not exactly died down. It's just gone more exclusive. There's a game of Tango being played. So I guess Quark kind of turns into a games workshop in the off hours.
I really like the analog between what's happening here and the idea of like a Chinatown district with a like some exotic off-hour gambling happening here, and it involves Viewmaster discs. And they do a slow pan around the table. There's sort of a lazy Susan of gambling in the middle, and they pan to the last person, and it's Dax, and she's kicking their asses.
Doesn't she ever lose?
Yeah, Dax learned as Curzon, but now in Jadzia edition is even better at this game than Curzon ever was. And despite the evidence that is right in front of them that women can be good at things too, they're like stating their belief that women suck at this, and therefore it is unjust that she be winning.
I really wanted a slow pan down to like a sleeved ankylosaur tail holding another couple of these discs, like an ace upper sleeve style.
No one
ever checks the ankylosaur for cards.
No, yeah. Would it be coming out of that, like, that marsupial pouch that she's sort of implied to have?
That is exactly what I'm talking about.
Gross. So we also get a little intrigue with a Ferengi waiter named Pell, who is kicking it to Quark about some types of sand peas that he thinks are gonna be a hot new bar snack at the bar because they make you so insanely thirsty.
There's no such thing as pretzels in the 24th century future. Like, this is a new technology, the idea of a salty snack.
When the Earth went full post-scarcity communism, unfortunately, the Snyders of Hanover Corporation went out of business.
If you're planning a first strike, you want to knock out the Snyders compound first.
Yeah. You want to go with the Snyders of Hanover pieces. Don't fuck with the nibs. The honey mustard and onion pieces, best pretzel in the game.
Oh, jeez. All that mustard powder?
Yeah.
Disagree.
Good stuff.
Hard disagree.
Delicious.
The trouble with eating a pretzel that's dusted with mustard powder is your mouth tastes like mustard powder after.
Yeah, it's fucking delicious. Well, in the absence of pretzels, they've got to do these peas, and Rom is, like, real threatened by this because this is definitely, like, somebody getting a come-up in a place where he feels like he is entitled to all come-ups because the boss is his brother.
And part of it is because Pell is a real go-getter, just in general. Like,
yeah.
Pell is very knowledgeable about the rules of acquisition. Pell has ideas about how to further Quark's business in ways that Rom really doesn't. Like, it's easy for him to be threatened by Pell because Pell is almost exactly Rom's opposite.
And this this starts an enmity between the two, where Rom keeps trying to fire Pell and Quark keeps shutting that down. So this is all interrupted by Grand Nagus Zek FaceTiming in to say that he is visiting the station.
The Ferengi expansion into the Gamma Quadrant is about to begin.
Which kind of blindsides Quark, but Zek is there to oversee the initial Ferengi business forays in the Gamma Quadrant.
I'd like you to be my chief negotiator.
I was a little surprised that Zek had the Khrushchev phone into Quark's quarters. Like, that direct line of communication would make me so paranoid if I were Quark. That thing could ring at any time.
Yeah, he's got the Amazon Echo that has the screen where you can just pop in.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
That's so creepy. Zek, give me a fucking break.
It's nice to have Wallace Shawn back, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, the promise here is that there's a shitload of latinum in it for him if he can just start up the business on the other side of the hole.
And latinum's all Quark wants in the world. So Zek comes aboard and like he pops into Commander Sisko's office to talk to Sisko and Kira. And, you know, it's one of those weird things where he's like a head of state that they have no respect for. You know, it's like Gaddafi visiting the UN. It's like, okay, I guess we have to listen to this asshole for a little while.
God, yeah, heads of state that no one has respect for. It's so weird. You see that so infrequently these days.
Yeah. Nice that we live in an era where we've put all that kind of silliness behind us.
One thing that they have not put behind them on this show is that, like, Zek and to a greater degree the Ferengi are still the physical comedians of Star Trek.
Little late, aren't we?
And he does the thing, it's kind of like negotiation edging, where he promises a bunch of free fertilizer to Kira as payment for letting him do the thing, and then like wraps up the meeting by going like, all right, well, I'll just put together an invoice for that fertilizer. And they're like, no, Zek, you said free. And it like goes back and forth a couple of times. And it's clear that he's really just getting off on the idea that they are haggling over a final agreement. Like, he doesn't actually care about the money even as much as the haggle.
It's the game.
Yeah.
That's what he lives for.
He does it all for the love. He gets the paper, but he's still for the love, y'all.
Looks like Kira has a slightly different haircut in the scene, Ben, and it made me think, is she a lost slickback? Is she the fourth slickback?
I feel like...
Because she seems to be going to the same hairstylist as Jake.
But how did that child acquire access to a shuttlecraft?
There are more slickbacks than I feel like the slickback trilogy would imply.
I think she qualifies. She's at least like slickback emeritus, right?
Yeah, she's like the big sister slickback.
Big brother, big slickback. You have another one?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. Golden cart. The cart. Golden cart. So Quark is super amped about his good fortune and the responsibility he's being given, but Pell sort of has a warning for him, and that warning is like, you know, it seems great on the surface that you're being put in charge here, but if it's a success, Zek is going to take all of the credit, and if it's a failure,
he's going to need someone to take the blame.
You mean me?
And Pell always seems to be around with that kind of knowledge. Like, she's a very steadying force for Quark in this way.
She's like, don't let Zek Shimon Perez your Yitzhak Rabin. Like, either way, Zek wins. You just want to make sure you don't lose.
I think it's important to apply Israeli government analogs to all of the situations here in this episode specifically. We get a reveal here after the advice that Pell gives Quark of a form of disrobing where Pell takes off her ears and sort of the corset that has been gathering her in. You know, like whenever I get home from a shoot or a day at work, you like to undo that top button, loosen the collar a little bit.
And make fists with your toes.
Throw my ears in the box where I keep them, just like Pell.
I know, it sounds crazy.
So it's a fairly startling reveal that that Pell is a lady Pell. And this is significant because all we know about Ferengi women up to this point are that they are submissive to their men, they are naked, and they aren't allowed to do business. These are things that Pell does all of.
Yeah, and they're also not allowed to leave the Ferengi homeworld, and Pell did that too.
Yeah.
Pell's ticking all the boxes that girls aren't supposed to tick. I like the end of this scene. Pell just like sits down in the chair, satisfied that she's not in drag anymore, but it's like... It's like one of those things that like only works in television and film. Like nobody ever sits down and just goes, and then stares off into space at indefinitely.
Pell sits down on Melora's remote control and turns off the gravity on accident. She'd be totally fucked if she got Melora's cabin.
Oh yeah, I wonder how that works. How do you think you get assigned quarters when you get to Deep Space Nine? Does Deep Space Nine charge rent? I guess it must, right? Because it's got to, like, it's Bajoran.
I bet there's a sliding scale based on accommodations and view, a lot like a cruise ship, right? You want outward-facing ring.
Yeah. Or if you get inward-facing on somebody hot, you know?
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Yeah, you don't want to get stuck with that situation you get in an apartment complex sometimes where
there's just some old man walking around in his underpants across the way.
Yeah, and he's just scratching.
Yeah, that's not good.
He needs to get a cream on that.
Yeah.
Those scratches.
Yeah, like go to the dermatologist, dude. What's going on?
The alien race that Quark is meant to do business with are the Dosi. And these guys have recently gone to a carnival where they do face painting.
Yeah.
And this stuff is not washing off.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what if a BDSM review from a bondage club went to a carnival and got some face paint?
The lead Dosi is a real that guy, Ben. It's Brian Thompson.
Yeah.
Who you might remember as the alien bounty hunter in X-Files. He had like a super long run on that show where he mostly just squinted into the camera and flexed his face.
Yeah.
He's the most muscular face I've ever seen.
Yeah, he could chop a brick in half by flexing his cheekbone.
He really has bad guy face too, because he was the bad guy from Cobra. And once you get typecast as a guy with that kind of face, I don't think he's never gonna be like the kindergarten cop. You know, he doesn't seem to have a very affectionate face.
His like even his headshot on IMDb is like he's smiling and like looking happy, and it's still terrifying. Like he just looks evil. Is that all association from the X-Files that I'm like projecting back onto him?
I don't think you're wrong. I mean, he's got that smile that looks like he's hiding an axe behind his back.
Yeah.
He's really great at his acting job, though. Like, this is not... I'm not disparaging the Brian Thompson.
No, he's
just
great.
Just saying that, like, he's sort of born for this.
It's fun that he gets, like, a bunch of stuff to do in this episode, you know?
They give him that uniform that reveals his ample décolletage.
Yeah.
Because when you are racking those pec exercises in the gym, you want to show that off.
He's got pecs that are so big that he has full on dude cleavage.
Yeah, they were like flipping through Loxana Troy's wardrobe to see if anything would work on him. The thing with the Dosi is that they're kind of a yeller screamer type. They're a real like bang on the table and get your way sort of alien race, and this is not a way that Quark likes to do business. Like he's very tactical and reasonable by comparison, but he's not scared really by all the bluster, which I think is neat to see.
Yeah.
Quark holds it together with the help of Pell.
You want to do business with the Ferengi? You talk to Quark.
Pell Hell is the Ferengi behind the Ferengi.
The guy behind the guy behind the guy.
Quark made a very shrewd business decision in hiring Pell to be a consultant on this project. And Pell, like, you know, gets off to a bit of a rocky start, but she is a natural and she helps him. You know, like, this first negotiation doesn't go great in that it doesn't, like, end with thumb on pad, but it does end with the Dozy saying that they'll think about what they've talked about, and at least the door is still open. It doesn't seem like a no yet.
And that feels like success at this point.
Right.
After a scene that began so threateningly.
Closer to success than it seemed like they would get at the beginning. Right. We have a kind of fun scene in Ops where Kira and Dax are hanging out, and the ersatz Hom that Zek rolls around with comes up there and gives Kira some kind of romantic overture from Zek, and they get to talking about how much Dax just really loves the Ferengi.
I don't understand your attitude about the Ferengi.
I mean, and I really admired Dax's description of them. It made me consider them in a way that I really hadn't before. Like, you really know what you get with a Ferengi. Like, there are a number of things to worry about, but at least you know. Like, that knife is not going to hit you in the back with a Ferengi. They're going to stab you in the chest.
I mean, they will stab you in the back, but they will make it plain that they are stabbing you in the back while doing it.
Right, and as you're being stabbed, you'll sort of shrug your shoulders and be like, I should have known better.
Yeah.
Dax has dealt with probably thousands of different races. For her to have any kind of specific love for an alien race, I think is very significant.
She's the kind of character that sees the good in things, you know? She's not a judgmental person, and so the things that are true of the Ferengi are true, and she is, like, willing to enjoy them on those terms. You know, like, Kira's kind of the opposite, right? She, like, hates anybody that isn't 1,000% Bajoran resistance affiliated.
Mm-hmm.
And really has a tough time, like, coming around on people that don't have that point of view in their life. And she eventually does, but, like, for Dax, it's very easy. And I like that about her.
There's really no reason to believe that Dax isn't a space hippie, right? Like, I can't think of a moment where she's acted particularly aggressive or mean or upset. Like, the most memorable things about her are her passivity and her just blissful enjoyment of other people.
Well, if that's true, Adam, Pell makes the gravest of errors when the next Tongo game ends because she goes with Dax to a second location.
Right. You can't do that.
Can't go there with a space hippie. And this is the scene where Pell lets slip her secret, right?
He doesn't even know I'm a female.
You're a woman?
Yeah, what's notable about this scene is how little Dax has to work to get a secret out of Pell that Pell has conceivably spent a very long time hiding.
I know.
Like,
but it's that thing of Pell thinking Dax knows, and so, like, why even conceal it?
Right, but Jesus, Pell, like, you need to be sure here. Everything depends on it. But it couldn't have happened with a better scene partner,
right?
Because Dax accepts this news with aplomb and support.
And you know for sure Dax isn't putting your business out in the street if you don't explicitly authorize that, you know?
No, the, like, only way you're going to get that intel is by taking out her ankylosaur and sticking it in yourself.
Yeah, but Dax really isn't a gossip.
No.
And she's, like, fascinated and intrigued by Pell. She has been kind of riding for a more woke way of thinking among the Ferengi she knows. And Pell is a great example of why that kind of thinking is true.
It really is easy for Dax to say, though, because Dax earns the Ferengi's respect by beating them at gambling, but Pell has been buried under the societal pressure that Ferengi put on females. And so, like, right. I totally understand her reticence or her disbelief in Dax's portrayal of Ferengi as being potentially open-minded to this idea.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, like, we don't really know. It would be interesting if they had spent some time on, like, what Pell's gambling strategy is. Like, would Pell be dope at Tango, but loses to the boss because that's, like, the proper Ferengi thing, or loses to the boss right. because she doesn't want to be made, you know, doesn't ever want anybody to notice her. Like, right. I feel like they could have explored the kind of subterfuge that she has to live her life with a little bit more by, like, using that gambling lens a little bit.
They never play it for comedy in a way that I am glad that they didn't. You know, like, there's no Mrs. Doubtfiring of Pell at any point, you know, where she's got to, like, stick two pies on the side of her head to confuse someone who's entered her quarters, you know, about the size of her lobes, you know?
I think that would be a punch down that
sure.
would be not surprising given the track record of Star Trek writers' rooms.
Well, but also not surprising with how this show treats Ferengi, and that was, I think, more the point that I was trying to make, is, like, this alien race, it has been a punch down from the beginning, and it shows a sort of restraint that I was happy to see.
Right. No, yeah, I'm there with you, buddy.
The one other thing that we get from the scene between Dax and Pell is that not only is Pell a Ferengi female, but she's also in love with Quark.
And, I mean, who wouldn't be, right? He treats her so well.
It sounds like a, you know, one of those workplace romances that's just born out of proximity and time.
Yeah.
More than anything specific to the characters.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pair.
A fucking pair.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
There's a line of dialogue here that clangs with me every time I hear it, and I wish it was never a line of dialogue in anything television or movie-wise.
Mm.
Pell gets started confiding her love of Quark with Dax and says, "There's only one thing I wasn't counting on. Falling in love." Like, there's only one thing I wasn't counting on. Ellipse moment to a line of dialogue is not great. That is a movie trailer narration. That is not a thing that people say.
I don't think there's a B storyline, but if there's a C storyline in this episode, it is the Zek trying to kick it to Kira storyline. She gives back the necklace or whatever, gets a little grabby with that ass.
I wanted Kira to fucking take his head off.
Yeah, like, does he have diplomatic immunity, or, like, why doesn't he get drop kicked out of an airlock?
Especially because Kira has thrown Quark through his own bar for not even touching her.
Like, who gives a fuck about Zek? What is the upside of her ignoring the fact that he is breaking her touch bubble?
I have no idea. It was not a great moment.
It's
for
a weird
Kira.
Episode because it's like it's about like some characters being confronted with misogyny being bad, right? But this just goes totally uncommented on, like, it's normal.
Especially because, you know, we have been groomed as viewers to understand Kira as someone who puts up with no shit.
Right. She
don't
definitely
show her putting up with shit.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Don't retcon shit being put up with.
I want to see Kira making a fist, and that fist is full of Zek's stupid fucking ear hair. Like, cut to her fucking braiding that and making it a medal on her chest.
That would,
like,
be
fuck Zek forever.
That would be great. Like, especially after the scene where he's getting his ear hair groomed. Like, if she just yanked a bunch of, like, a fistful of it out of his head and walked off.
Yeah.
Like, extracted payment for that disrespect.
Here's why that's a great rewrite. It's because it doesn't change the relationship between Zek and Kira. If anything, Zek would probably love that shit.
Right.
And through that rewrite, the respect we have for Kira as a kick-ass person remains. Like, I don't like how they've turned Kira into a subservient person in yeah. this case, a diplomatic subservient in a way that we know she isn't.
Yeah. So, P Pell and Quark have, I guess Zek at some point gave them orders to increase the buy on the Tula berries that they're supposed to be purchasing from the kinked out aliens. And it doesn't go well. The aliens leave, so Quark and Pell have to take the Negus' shuttle through the wormhole and into the Gamma Quadrant and pursue them, which is kind of an adventure. Also kind of surprising that the Negus has such a small car, given his position.
It really looks perhaps the most Previa-like of all the ships.
Like, this is TNG canonical Ferengi shuttle. I mean, that'd be like if the head of the Federation cruised around in a bunk bed.
The thing I dislike maybe even most about the Ferengi shuttle is how undetailed it is. It is so smooth.
Yeah.
Like, there's subtle things about Federation ships, like that Aztec pattern that are on the ships that
right.
look really nice in three dimensions, but this thing is like a lozenge.
Yeah, all it has is those, like, those little pincers on the front.
Yeah.
It's like, who
cares?
Yeah,
what do those things do?
Yeah. They're not pinching anything.
No. But Zek sure is. Pinching some butt.
Yeah, what if that shuttle sexually harassed a spaceship?
I think that's what it was built for. Gross.
It's amazing that they've been showing these Ferengi ships for such a long time. Like, this is probably like the fifth season of television that they've existed in. And they're just now paying that off.
There's no windows in that back part of the van. Also, Ben.
Mm.
Kind of dark to think about.
If this Ferengi shuttle's a rockin'.
When they get to the planet, Quark has a scene here that I really thought you'd appreciate. He kind of Pee Wee Herman's the moment with the lead Dosey guy.
Yeah.
Like, he sort of does the Pee Wee knock down the motorcycle thing. In grabbing a barrel of the wine and spilling it to get this guy to take him seriously.
I should have killed you back on that station.
But you didn't.
And his doesn't care if he lives or die attitude, I think, engenders some respect from this Dosey guy. But he's like, no, man, it's not that I don't want to do a deal with you. It's that I can't. I don't have the wine.
I didn't get that, like, they're trying to buy the wine from the Dosey, or the Tula berries to make the wine from the Dosey, on the idea that they're going to make Tula Berry wine the most popular drink in the sector. Wouldn't it already be the most popular drink in the sector if they have the raw materials for it? I mean, I don't mean to be a guy that's making fun of somebody about raw materials, but...
No, that would be very hypocritical of you. Yeah, the significance of what they're trying to do here is a little bit lost on me, especially because, like, you would assume, like anyone and anything else, people would have very specific Tula Berry wine preferences, whether or not that's related to brand or mixological makeup.
Yeah, if you're going to go take them back to the Ferenginar to cultivate the wine, the terroir is not going to be on, you know?
What makes them think that drinking out of a bottle with pincers on it is going to be what they want to do when they're used to this wine flowing like out of three spigots into a fountain?
Yeah. Is that what that is? The blue shit is Tula Berry wine?
Yeah, that's what I got.
I was just reading that as the stuff that's in a portable restroom that you see at like a festival or on a construction site.
Yeah, you're thinking the Dosey just have like an open trough style toilet in the center of their party.
Yeah. One of them was flying on a commercial jet and took a dump and took one look at that stuff and was like, "Hey, that looks pretty good."
Yeah, that's not where my mind went on that one. Pretty gross. But imagine the implications if the Dosey, in addition to just being hyper aggressive, also eat and drink their own piss and shit. That's why they're so upset.
They're very kinky people. You can't judge.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for judging.
Adam, shut up. Let's talk to these people about the Max Fun Drive one more time.
Yeah, this is the second week of the drive.
Our last episode of Greatest Gen before the end of the drive.
Which means we're halfway there.
We're halfway there, living on a prayer. We would love to see the kind of support that came out last year come out again this year. Adam, there are a ton of bonus episodes that we have made already available to donors at the $5 per month level. And these are episodes I'm really proud of. Like, last year we did, as a second bonus episode for The Drive, a Crimson Tide episode that Adam Ragusea made an entire Picard song style music bed for. Out of sound drops that we got from Crimson Tide. And he is already working on a Red October sound bed for a episode that we may, in fact, be doing this year.
If things go according to plan, I would expect that to happen in the near term. I think, God, having Ragusea on our side for the special eps has been a real treat for us. Someone was just asking me about that Crimson Tide episode today. They were like, I heard that you did a Crimson Tide episode. And I guess it's not necessarily common knowledge that we have the Crimson Tide episode as a donor exclusive episode, but we also have a couple of our live episodes from our most recent tours.
Yeah, we've got the First Contact live episode and the Star Trek Generations episode. Those are both things I'm super proud of. And if we do a donor bonus about Star Trek V with the Flophouse, that will also be bonus content. So getting in on the entry level $5 per month is how you get at that stuff. And, you know, like, I think parting with that once a month is something that most budgets can accommodate if you're not already a donor. And it is how we support the production of this program. And we pay for things like hosting and the, you know, internet bills that we rack up connecting with each other. And
the P.O. box, so people don't know our home address.
Right. And
things that we need as a proper show.
And, like, we're very close to announcing our 2018 tour, and we're coming to a lot of parts of the United States this year and a bunch of parts of Canada, too. Like, we're going to more cities than I ever thought it was possible for us to visit on the merits of this program. And we're able to do that because, you know, we can afford to take financial risks like traveling all over the country because we have listener support.
Right. I mean, so by supporting the show, what you're paying for are all of the shows that we've made up until now, but also the potential that you and I have to create extra shows and to go out on tour and to create all of the things that we've had ideas for up until now. It's really an investment. You're paying for what we've already made, but it's also an investment in our future. So if you care about what we've done here, if you've enjoyed our work up until now, it's a way to ensure that that work keeps going forward in a big, big way.
If $5 a month is something you can afford easily, maybe consider stretching it to $10 a month, where you get a Drive exclusive pin designed by the great Megan Lynn Cott, who designed the enamel pins from last year, which were a crazy big success. And the pin for The Greatest Generation this year is Deep Space Nine, and says still a bit embarrassed, and it's really awesome. It like fully, it's like really on theme with the Dustbuster Club pin from last year. I really like it.
It fits spiritually into what we do, maybe better than anything else.
Yeah, it's great. At the $20 per month level, Max Fun Family Cookbook with some space themed cookie cutters. And you get the enamel pin, and you get the bonus content.
Ben, at the $35 level, you get all of those things, plus a special Maximum Fun engraved carafe. It's a juice carafe.
But it's not just for juice. Gentiles can use it, too.
In keeping with the theme of the episode, you're right, Ben. you can fill it with your favorite alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverage. You can put a bunch of flowers in it. You can fill it with the meat and cheese dip from the recipe that I've submitted to the cookbook.
Which you would also get at this level.
Yeah.
As a new and upgrading member. At the $50 per month level, metal engraved Maximum Fun membership card, plus the craft, plus the cookbook, plus the pin, plus the bonus content.
divide your powders into lines with a metal cart, almost perfectly suited to do so.
What you do with those powders after they're railed up like that is up to you.
Maybe you keep those powders in the carafe. You keep that metal card nearby, and you enjoy the cookbook all at the same time.
I mean, it sounds like you're rich. You have $50 a month to part with? Give me a break.
I'm looking at you, all of you rich people who are feeling guilty about being so rich. Here's how you alleviate that guilt. You alleviate that guilt by supporting the Greatest Generation at something greater than the $50 level.
$100 a month, $200 a month. Both of these are levels that you can contribute at.
Support at that level not only would give us a big, big boost, but I think what that does is it also it supports at a level that takes care of a lot of our listenership that is not in a financial position to support us this year. And we love them just as much as anyone else. Free ways to support the show include a 5-star review on your podcast purveyor of choice or just tweeting or telling a friend about it.
Yeah, the pledge drive is not here to be a guilt trip on people who aren't in a financial position to support. Like, we put this out for free all year. If you are in a position to pay what you can to support it and keep it free for everyone, that is hugely appreciated. And I know that the people that can't afford it really appreciate it. I mean, we hear from people every week that this show has impacted in all kinds of different ways. And, you know, like we had a marriage proposal on the show this year. We've had all kinds of amazing, positive stuff come out of this project. And keeping it free and unladen with tons and tons of ads is a real goal of Adam and mine. And every bit of listener support that we get goes to help keep it that way.
There's a link in the show notes. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Support the shows you love for another year. Make sure you check the box next to The Greatest Generation. And thank you for your support and another great Max Fun Drive.
Yeah, and while you're at it, why not just check off Friendly Fire and Greatest Discovery while you're at it? Even if you don't listen to those shows, just help your boys out.
Yeah, that's all going to us too.
What are you doing now?
Exactly.
Quark and Pell do something on this business trip that I have refused to do for a long time, which is they share a hotel room.
Yeah, the idea of sharing a hotel room with a business associate, not great.
No.
Whether or not Pell's gender identity is an issue here, that does not matter. They should not be getting into the same bed together as coworkers. That's not fun.
No. It's inappropriate no matter what the gender situation is. If they were both boys,
right.
Inappropriate. If one's gay, one's straight, inappropriate. If both are gay, if both are straight. If one's a boy, one's a girl. If both are girls, all scenarios, inappropriate. A business should not be asking this, especially somebody as rich as Zach, right? Like, he should shell out for a couple of rooms and let them earn the Starwood points on their own cards. That's the way, you know, you build esprit de corps among your employees.
What's the deal? Like, do they have a Zec company card and they're like paying as they go? Because if I were them, I'd just be invoicing after the fact.
Yeah.
Get two rooms.
Yeah.
Invoice for two rooms.
That's how you earn all
just
the Starwood points, Adam.
I mean, ask forgiveness later, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't know what the company travel policy was. I'm sorry. Next time. Adam, when I travel with my wife, if we go to a hotel room that has two beds, we sleep in two different beds. I don't like sharing anything with anybody.
You're really Brady Bunching it, huh?
Yeah. I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. This is one of those emotionally charged situations that leads to a lot of bad decision making. Pell is really panicked when Quark starts kind of like disrobing, and she's like, well, maybe we should drink and strategize about business first. And I thought this was like her trying to get him drunk so that he would pass out before her.
Yeah.
But in fact, it is her doing liquid courage to build up the nerve to lay a smooch on him.
Yeah, which she does.
And he is not entirely unreceptive to it. Like, she kisses him and he kind of like starts lying back on the bed like, I don't know what's going on, but I like this. Which I kind of believe, right? Like, I think that if you are responding to like the pheromones and personality of a person, you probably, even if they weren't like, even if they weren't signaling the gender that you're nominally attracted to, I bet you still fall in love or whatever. In this sure. very implausible scenario.
Yeah, and at least in the future that's depicted here, like, Pell's gender doesn't appear to be an issue. Like,
right.
Quark is happy for the affection.
Yeah, he's only happy briefly because the Dozai lady that they had in the initial negotiation barges into their hotel room, which is apparently all they have is a gauzy curtain. Blocking it off.
I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
Given how violent the Dozai have been depicted as being, I would be very scared to stay in this hotel.
Yeah, there's definitely not a lock on that door.
No.
There's no knot that's as good as a lock.
No, it's just a gauzy curtain and then one of those halogen lamps from the 90s that used to burn people's houses down.
It's got a real operating room type feel. Like, that bed is super high.
Yeah.
The light is very bright.
Yeah. Weird vibes over on the Dozai planet.
Yeah.
But she's like, hey, listen, I'm gonna kick it to you for real. The wine that you're here trying to buy doesn't exist in the kind of quantities you guys are trying to buy it in. But I can sell you information about who you can talk to get that kind of quantity. And it's only going to cost you a little bit. The people you really need to talk to are the Karema. They're part of the Dominion.
A group referred to so casually, it almost makes them forgettable. Like, Quark and Pell are like, huh, well, that's cool. Thanks for the knowledge. Like, contrast that with how the Borg were introduced.
Yeah.
Like, where the threat was existential immediately. I really like how subtle they roll out the Dominion in Deep Space Nine.
I think that this... Your average viewer watching contemporaneous with the release would probably miss this entirely. And
yeah.
Because I don't think that the Dominion shit really pops off for a long time after this.
No.
They're probably a bigger part of the Deep Space Nine series than the Borg were part of TNG in terms of like how many episodes there are about them.
Right.
But it's very subtle.
Yeah, they weren't really a concern until season 3.
So all along they've been suspecting that Zek knows more about doing biz in the Gamma Quadrant than he's been letting on. And so Quark and Pell head back and Quark is like, hey dude, I actually found something out. And he says,
I could arrange a meeting between you and a powerful member of the Dominion.
This is what Zek was looking for. And Zek is able to... make a deal with Quark at this point.
I'll see to it that you earn a percentage of every Ferengi opportunity in the Gamma Quadrant.
Which is probably just a dump truck of latinum, right?
It also, like, if Quark is going to be instrumental in the business dealings in the Gamma Quadrant, it probably gives Pell a little hope that they would reunite at some point, because you get into a little bit of what Pell's whole plan was the whole time. Like, Pell wants to go to the Gamma Quadrant so she can live free from the societal constraints of the Ferengi and would love to be there with Quark.
Yeah.
Pell is also shattered that Quark doesn't want to discuss what happened on the Dosi planet. And not only that, actually denies that it happened to begin with, which is, like, profoundly hurtful for her.
Yeah, he engages in an act of vicious makeout erasure.
Right.
And
which is something we've been on the receiving end on quite a bit in our lives, I'm sure.
Yeah. Him? No, didn't do that with him. You must be thinking of somebody else.
I'm just squinting, looking out in the middle distance, thinking, college.
I'm squinting out into the middle distance thinking 1 or 2 years after college.
I'm squinting, looking into the middle distance thinking my entire marriage.
R- Rom has not been sitting on his hands in Quark's absence, and one of the things he did was go toss Pell's quarters and find the lobe loaf kit that she kept under her bed, because the deal is that Ferengi women have substantially smaller ears than male Ferengis, but still substantially larger ears than humans.
Ben, I feel like you and I have hidden things, things that we didn't want a parent to find, a little better than Pell hides her fake ear playset.
Right.
Like, Rom fucking tosses the entire quarters in a fairly thorough manner. I was impressed by this.
Yeah, but then they're just under the bed, right?
Yeah, I feel like I check under the bed first.
The Negus leaves, and Rom is like, "Hey, dude, I gotta tell you something, man." And he pulls Pell over, and this is all shot like on wide angle with the the superstructure of the bar forming kind of a proscenium around it.
Is the proscenium the space between the dick and the butthole? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's like a pantomime that takes place between the dick and the butthole. And it is very.
Is that the place between your nose and your top lip?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adam.
That is.
That's what you're thinking of, and it's very clear that Rom is putting Pell's business out in the streets, and Quark has a fainting reaction to this. He gets the vapors.
One of those super fun falls out of frame.
Yeah.
You know, into the waiting.
It's not even out of frame, Adam. It's out of the proscenium arch. into the wings he falls.
For all of you out there drinking every time Ben says proscenium. Maybe you have a buffer water around now.
Guess you never took a theater class in college, Adam.
Sure didn't.
So yeah, like, I feel like all of the tension in the episode, like, that it's been building the entire time, and this is like the 38-minute mark, and all of the tension has to get now hashed out before the end of the episode. And it's a lot. Like, there's tension between Quark and Rom. Like, Rom has, like, a little bit of leverage on Quark now, which is not great for Quark because he thinks his brother's an idiot.
Not the secret keeper that Dax is, certainly.
No. Quark goes to Pell's quarters and finds her hanging out in lady format, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he wanders over to her condo and she's just chilling.
And he's like,
"Where are your lobes?"
To me. He's disgusted that she's breaking Ferengi cultural mores by being a lady wearing clothes, and he's like giving her a bunch of latinum and just saying, like, "Get the fuck out of my life. You've come very close to ruining me, because if I am outed as a male Ferengi who did business with a female Ferengi, everything will end for me." This, like, the character of Quark, who we have been asked to accommodate as one of our protagonists, does something really nasty and seemingly pretty unforgivable here.
And it's not the first time that he's acted in a way that has felt unforgivable. It's a testament to his cult of personality that we continue to like him.
Yeah, like, the idea that he can be a sympathetic character after this scene is astonishing. But in the next scene, like, he kind of saves the cat. He,
right.
Like, they go and talk to the Negus, and the Negus is like,
"I'll see to it that you spend the rest of your life in prison."
And Quark turns the like accusation and recrimination right back around on him and says, like, "Hey, you did business with her too. Like, your hands are just as dirty as mine are in the scenario in which hands are being dirtied by this. So you need to stop talking shit, Zek."
Yeah, they all kind of feel like it's sort of the circular firing line of everyone knows the same thing that could get each other person in trouble, and not just in trouble, but like imprisoned for a very long time. And so knowing that, they agree to keep the secret.
Like, it's talked about as though it's illegal, but we're on a Bajoran space station. Like, it's only illegal on Ferenginar, It is not, in fact, illegal out here. I feel like they could have written this in a different way where they're like, what an interesting problem for the Ferengi to make for themselves if they say, like, okay, like, let's make a carve-out in our code that it's okay outside of the homeworld for Ferengi women. And then that Ferengi women have this, like, incentive to emancipate themselves from Ferenginar and start, like, finding ways to sneak out. Wouldn't that be cool? And like, interesting storyline to start?
It would be, and it would be tied into the idea of whether or not Deep Space Nine is, like, an extradition-free zone.
Yeah.
In this way. Like, the one character that we don't really get a lot of at all is Sisko in this episode, and I am sure that he would have some very organized thoughts on the matter.
Right.
And that's sort of what we don't get with a conflict of this type. When it's Ferengi versus Ferengi...
When it's loaf-on-loaf crime?
It is not articulated plainly.
Yeah, so she takes her money and goes, and Quark's interest in Ferengi operations in the Gamma Quadrant is nullified by Zek, and it's kind of just back to square one, right? Like everybody comes out behind.
Yeah, I mean, Quark has got to be pretty devastated that... You know, the potential profit that the Gamma Quadrant represented is gone, but he seems to have made a sort of peace with it if it meant Pell's life as a free person has been spared.
You know, I have some friends who, you know, either are from traditional cultures or whose parents are immigrants and they're from traditional cultures, and they are kind of like Quark in this episode, caught between the values of their parents and the values of the United States. And, like, who they marry is tremendously important to their parents. Like, you know, if you're Muslim, you have to marry a Muslim. Or if you're Jewish, you have to marry a Jew. Like, that kind of fealty to traditional values that squashes the potential of a relationship between Pell and Quark is... a real thing that happens, you know. Like, Quark, I think, really loves Pell and is too wrapped up in his own traditional thoughts to accommodate the idea of being with a woman who defies a lot of those values. You know, from our perspective, it sucks, but, like, I can imagine that... I imagine a lot of people identify with that, whether or not, like, the specific values on display are something they identify with.
Quark appears to grieve for the profit that he's lost, but, like, as a viewer, I grieve for the growth that he does not get to experience.
Yeah.
Because I think Pell unlocks something about him that is super interesting to me that I would like to see explored more. Like, if we never see Pell again, it feels like a little bit of an opportunity lost to grow Quark's character outside of the gray area that he exists in right now.
I totally agree. Like, she goes to the Gamma Quadrant. Like, what if she turns up, you know, in a season rich as fuck and powerful and, like, you know, wielding some kind of business empire over there? That would be great.
Like, if she goes over there and kicks ass and returns, that would be a greater threat than Pell represents in this episode.
Agree.
Give her the re-entry into the show like Vash got.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
Boy, as hard as it is for me to say this about a Ferengi's episode, I kind of did. I mean, I don't love the way it's resolved, but, like, it's fun to see a show have a character like Quark that is... you know, repugnant in a lot of ways and really, like, dig into, like, what makes him tick. And, like, they have Quark do things that are really deeply unlikable in this episode. And they also have him have little glimmers of moments where you could see his potential as a good person. And, he seems very human suddenly.
At this point in time, I think he's the most interesting character on the show, and I don't think it's close. Like, he does, as we've said before, he does contemptible things, but he also he lives by a code that keeps him from from going fully dark.
A man has got to have a code.
The good things that he does often go completely unseen. Like, he gets caught doing almost everything wrong, but very few people catch him doing right.
That's true.
Yeah, I think I like this episode too.
Priority one message from...
Ben, we've got no priority one messages this week because support for the show is coming from the 2018 Max Fun Drive.
Hell yeah.
Thanks to everyone who has supported the show up until now. I want to thank everyone who is a new supporter, and an extra big thank you to those who have upgraded their level of support this year.
Yeah.
That really means a lot to us.
If you've ever thought about getting a P1 and felt like you didn't want to part with $100 or whatever, like $5 a month does not hurt as much as $100 all at once. Head to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who has decided to support The Greatest Generation.
Gotta get that gold press latinum. Get that
gold press latinum.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I
right? Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
My Shimoda comes from that very first scene. Morn sleeping on the bench. They're finding a way to grow Morn's character 5 seconds at a time.
Yeah.
I really like that. I
no
think
dialogue.
Maybe...
Always just a thing he is up to.
I know all of his scenes have... at some point had to have been put together into sort of a Morn reel. I'm not going to ruin myself by watching that right now, But I look forward to the idea of all these little snippets being put together into a greater Morn story. But this particular chapter in that story, I got a real kick out of. He's like the Mervyn's guy outside the store that isn't open yet. He just needs to get into Quark's, and I love that.
Yeah, dude, same. I wrote down Morn, and you described exactly why. I also just loved getting a nice close-up on Morn, you know? Like, a nice, tight shot of Morn's face is something, you know, he's generally deep in background, and it was fun to, like, really, like, get a good look at how that loaf works.
His face is like stone. It never moves at all. So all of his expression is through the eyes. I think that's a magic trick I really appreciate.
See what Dax sees in him.
Yeah. What do we have coming up on the next step, Ben?
The next episode of season 2, episode 8, Necessary Evil. An attack on Quark's life brings Odo face to face with a 5-year-old unsolved murder for which Kira was a prime suspect. Or, as our friends at the Netflix Corporation have it, a beautiful Bajoran woman calls Quark to Bajor and persuades him to retrieve a strongbox that her husband kept hidden on Deep Space Nine. Man, that Netflix subscription makes it seem like it's going to be a Quark episode. And the Amazon one makes it seem like it's either going to be an Odo episode or a Kira episode.
Get it together, guys.
Yeah, got to get on... Got to get on the same page with these caps.
You want to see in what condition we will be watching this episode?
I do.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I've put the die into the backgammon cup. And I've thrown it on the table. My roll is 2, Ben.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
The number 2.
Okay, Adam, that puts us on 22. We're in striking distance of a Quark's bar for next time, but just a standard issue episode next time on The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine.
What a relief. Well, want to thank everyone who has supported the show during the Pledge Drive once again. Pledge Drive only happens once a year, and that's why we keep ringing this bell through the episodes during the drive. I think everyone involved can appreciate that we don't do this multiple times a year. We aren't doing that. We're not larding up our episodes with advertisements. We're not doing all sorts of distasteful things to try to get listener support. We're trying to do it the right way, which means this once a year drive format. It's the one time of year where Maximum Fun gives away really cool prizes to those who choose to support the shows that they love.
Yeah, and every time you listen to the show, from here on in, you can think, hey, I helped make that happen.
Every time you listen to the show drinking out of that juice carafe, you can think, hey, I paid for this juice carafe and also helped out my friends at The Greatest Generation.
That's a great way to be. So head to MaximumFun.org/donate right now. Make sure that you are a new and upgrading member. And we will see you back here next week with a regular old episode that doesn't have a pledge break in it. We appreciate your forbearance and all of the support that has, I'm sure, poured out for us by this point, even though we are recording this from before the pledge drive even starts.
We'll be in pledge drive refractory period when we come back at you with another great episode. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that tells its story in flashback.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.